All right, welcome to Return on Podcast. I'm Tyler, and we're doing a summer school series called Gold Nuggets for E-commerce Brands. We're going to dive into a few books that have really changed my life as a business owner. And because I'm a nerd and I read a lot and I do these little micro book reports anyway, I thought I would pull out the best ones and do the shortest version for you, my audience here at ROP. So we're going to give you three nuggets, two application stories, and one game-changing hack, all in less than 10 minutes. Are you ready? Let's dive in to today's discussion. All right, friends, it is time to land the plane and wrap up this summer school series from Return on Podcast. We're going to get back to the normal, literally next week, as we get further into the month of July here, we're going to get back to the normal interviewing specialist experts, CEOs in the e-commerce space. I have an interview coming up with a real supply chain guru that has found some incredible hacks to move his Amazon business forward as a seven-figure CEO. I've got other guys in the space that I can't wait for you to hear me interview and for us to kind of wrap back and forth. So we'll be back on that. But today I want to wrap up this summer school, you know, golden nugget series. We really, I think this has been a valuable exercise for me because I needed to go back and just process some of these crucial books that have been so life-changing for me. Again, guys, I probably read 50 books a year. I picked these six over the last 3 years that I really think are game changers. These are all six pretty close to being in my gotta read every year list. We started with Traction EOS by Gino Wickman about how to build systems. Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell about how to delegate and elevate yourself. Isn't It Obvious by Ellie Goldratt. We talked about how to manage the bottlenecks of your business. Atomic Habits by James Clear, which is a game changer on how to become more productive and use habits to get where you want to go. Last week, we talked about the Exitpreneur's Playbook by my friend Joe Valley about how to maximize the enterprise value of your e-commerce business. And today, in this final episode, what I want to do is I want to talk about The Leader's Guide, a book called The Leader's Guide by Eric Ries. Now, you've heard of Eric Ries, and you're like, where have I heard of that guy? You've heard of him because his famous book about a decade ago was called The Lean Startup. And I wanted to sneak this book in at the end here because I think it's important once we've learned how to manage our own habits, once we've built some systems into our team so that we're more scalable as a business, it's important that we start thinking about the future. How do you innovate? How do you stay relevant? How do you not die on the vine, even if you have a really strong set of products? So let me take a couple minutes just to talk through the way Eric's book, The Leader's Guide. By the way, this is like a follow-up book that he wrote to help people apply kind of the war stories of how his clients have applied the lean startup method over the last decade. I would say that if you choose to listen to it on Audible, the interviews with these executives and CEOs I thought was probably just as interesting as the content, although I love hearing him talk about his stuff. So the book is, if you don't remember what lean startup is about, it's all about this idea of an MVP, getting a minimum viable product and getting these assumptions tested as quickly as possible. Go to market with a minimum viable. You can spend a ton of money on a big, hairy, full launch and be doing the wrong thing. It's more important to get feedback from real customers. And that actually kind of leads me into the first nugget. I don't think you guys ever read Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, but one of the quotes from that book is, you've got to shoot bullets before you shoot cannonballs. And so Eric Ries's version of that is what he calls an MVP, right? You've got to make a list of your assumptions, your hypotheses, and you got to get some live ammo out there to test the validity of those assumptions as quickly and as cheaply as possible. So the way this might apply to a product, you may use something like PickFu or some other way to A/B test, you know, a product before you go live with it, or you may use something like Kickstarter to try to understand if customers really care about the new product you're designing, right? What does it look like for me to get? Don't buy seven colors, buy one color. Like that's kind of this lean startup mantra of how do we start with as little expense as possible to make sure that we're really over our target with our products. And so that's the first nugget here is don't forget that. That's so true for an e-commerce business. Should I expand my catalog to be a different brand? Should I expand my catalog to address a different customer? Should I expand my catalog to have different variants and colors? The answer is you might not know. And so the question that Eric would ask you is, okay, Tyler, how do I run the most intelligent information gathering experiment with as little expense or as little time lag as possible. So that's the first nugget. Make sure you don't forget to shoot bullets before you fire those cannonballs. Nugget number two, this is really important. In particular, as you're looking at launching your MVP for a new product or for a new initiative, you've got to really enumerate, list out your, he calls them leap of faith assumptions. These are the assumptions, these are the guesses that you're making that if they are wrong, you're screwed. This product is not going to work. It's dead. An example of that for me is if I'm going to start an accounting firm that only services e-commerce and Amazon sellers, that's a pretty strong leap of faith assumption, right? I've got an assumption there that there are enough 6- and 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands in the States where I'm a qualified accountant that will buy a service like mine, that it's worth curving my entire business around this niche. You have similar assumptions about what your customers care about, the features. Some of those are ancillary concerns, but some of them are core. Some of them are, if I'm wrong about this, if I'm like, it's funny, there's a lot of movement right now in like kitchen stuff for men or personal care stuff for men. It's like, hey, it's kind of been a women's thing, but it's expanding now where they're selling it to us guys. And that was a core, crucial leap of faith assumption for those companies. You know, Dove had to ask the question, will men buy a soap that smells good or something like that, right? And so they had to test those assumptions pretty carefully before they put millions and millions of dollars behind them. So make sure you know what your these are going to kill me assumptions are and test those first. Nugget number three, you know, corporations, this is really interesting. And if you're larger, you know this to be true. Entities, companies, corporations are designed to be resilient. We don't want to kill the golden goose. We found something that works. It's creating profit. And as a result of that, we tend to create processes and management systems that kill, crush, eliminate any variance or any innovation in our companies. We have to be really careful about this. We don't want to overtrain our managers. We don't want to overtrain our department heads, our product designers to be so rigid and follow the rules that have worked in the past that we forget that the market changes, that our customers' needs change. And so that was my third nugget out of this book was, oh, wow, there are instances where we need to be a little bit more entrepreneurial. Most of us that would listen to the Return on Podcast show are kind of naturally wired to be rule breakers and to be entrepreneurs. I know that's why I started my company. But just remember, the bigger you get, the $20 million version of your company, if you're not quite there yet, you're going to feel tremendous pressure to protect your thing, whatever it is that's worked. And you got to be careful not to hold that thing too tightly or it could be the thing that kills you. Let me give you a couple of stories that kind of illustrate this. One of the most important case studies that I had to study in grad school, if you didn't get an MBA, great. It probably was a waste of time for you and me both. But there was a few things that I gleaned from it. And one was Kodak. You remember that company out of New York that really dominated the film and camera industry for like 100 years? I mean, they had literally more than 80% of the market share and more than an 80% gross profit margin on their film. And they were the guys, their scientists at Kodak invented the digital camera in the late 1970s. But out of fear of cannibalizing their own core, very profitable business, you know, they shelved it, they hid it. They didn't actually bring that product to market because they didn't want to cannibalize this amazing business they had. Well, guess what? They shelved it at their own peril. We all know the story. A few years later, Fujifilm figured it out, went to market first. And now here we are in 2023 and Kodak has gone through a couple of bankruptcies and they are a very, very tiny shell of what they were back in the 70s and 80s. And so the cautionary tale there is make sure that you invest a little bit into the risky future business that might kill your current business. Second story, a little bit closer to home for an accounting firm like mine. And this is one that came out of the book from Eric Ries is he's interviewing the guy. And if you get a chance to listen to this, you're going to love it. He's interviewing the guy that was on the team at Intuit. In case you don't know what Intuit is the company that owns QuickBooks Online and TurboTax and some of these other accounting softwares. He was working for Intuit on a small elite team and they wanted to innovate some web-based applications in Intuit as a big monster company killed them, made it so bureaucratic, created so many blockers that they all quit. They ended up founding other companies, ended up buying this fledgling startup called Mint.com, which of course the moral of that story is I think it was a decade later that Intuit had to buy Mint.com for something like $300 million when they had the guys on their team. What were they paying them? couple hundred thousand dollars a year. I mean, literally, think about the budget. Think about this, like if they had just left these dudes alone and let them build this business from inside into it. Instead, they beat them up so much that they left, created a $300 million acquisition that they could have had for like $10 million in total investment if they just left them alone. And so again, the cautionary tale is make sure that you allocate some of your energy to build what's going to come next instead of just managing out all variants, managing out things that don't perfectly align with your system. Let me kind of drive this home with my next level hack for this final episode here. When you think about that guy from Mint.com, Intuit, he kind of uses a rule of thumb for his companies that I want to share with you. I kind of adopted this as a hack. He says you need to intentionally budget your resources, your time, your energy into three time horizons. And I don't remember what the order of them is, but the first one is your core business, right? 70% of your resources, energy, time, money, according to this gentleman, needs to be put into the golden goose. Or yes, we got to keep the business going. We got to keep the lights on. We got to keep generating profit on a quarter by quarter or month by month basis. That's 70%. But you need to allocate 20% for growing. You know, you can't maintain something until you've grown it enough to make it matter. So investing in new marketing channels, investing in new growth strategies, more aggressive advertising. That's what your 20% for growth is. And then that final 10%, he recommends investing in something wild off the ball. Try experiments on things that might be the next big thing. He compares it almost to buying life insurance. You may never get a return on investment for that small 10% of your budget or energy that you spend inventing. You hope you don't. You hope you never need to exercise the life insurance, but you sure as heck better bet on it, because in the unlikely event that a model arises that crushes yours, a competitor comes up with a product that's just better than yours in your category, you would better have something to pivot to. And the only way you can have something to pivot to and invest in is if you've invented it. And the only way that a larger company is ever going to invent the next thing is to intentionally have people, have budget, have priority, not a lot, 10% maybe of the total budget around building something that might matter in the future. And so I want to leave you with that as we close this series from Return on Podcast, this summer school Return on Podcast with these six books. I would love for you to read these books. I'd love for you to give me your feedback on how you're applying them. Again, when we come back next week, we'll be back to the normal show. We'll be interviewing and learning hacks and habits from the best CEOs in the e-commerce space. I'm Tyler Jeffcoat. This has been a lot of fun putting this little mini summer school series together. Thank you for bearing with me. Have a great day.